Welcome to the Day One Podcast Extra. This is Peter Wallace, and with me today is the Reverend Dr. Emmanuel McCall, current moderator of the Cooperative Baptist Fellowship. Emmanuel is also pastor of the Fellowship Group Baptist Church in East Point, Georgia, and a faculty member at Mercer University's McAfee School of Theology. Emmanuel, we're delighted to have you with us.
Thank you, Peter. Good to be with you.
We talked about your role as moderator on the regular Day One program, but I wonder if you'd give us an idea of what your year has been like serving in this role.
I have enjoyed this year. I've gotten to visit a number of our state fellowships. I've gotten to see other people in the Cooperative Baptist Fellowship doing some very creative and innovative things. We're really a missional kind of group. It's not a matter of having a headquarters with money going up to the headquarters. It's been how do people discover where God is at work? How do we join God in being the people of God? So it's been exciting as I've traveled, as I've gotten to meet other people who are part of the fellowship, as I've gotten to meet many of the partners. We have 14 theological schools that we partner with. We have a number of other initiatives that are taken, 40-some, that we partner with. So it's been a joy. It's been a joy to see people excited about their faith, about loving God, about trying to help love this world back into a meaningful relationship with God. It's also been exciting being in the various councils and deliberative meetings that have to go on in a venture like this.
As you said, the fellowship is quite missional in its work. What are some of the ways it is serving in the name of Christ around the world?
We're doing a number of things. There are churches that are going out and literally paying their own way to go to places where they're needed, where they work alongside the people that are there. We don't go to disrupt people's lives or to tell them how to live. But we find out those places of need and areas that we can respond to. And so we go to work with people to stand alongside them. There are things that need to be done. Somebody needs to take the initiative to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so as people related to the fellowship see needs, they make us aware of them. And then we look at how we best can resource them. Do we have to send people designated to resource them? Do we need to send goods? Do we need to help people get the training? Those who are living in a locale, is it other training or resources that they need? What do we need to do to help them be the people of God?
I'm curious as to how a church might affiliate with the Cooperative Baptist Fellowship. If there's a church out there that is interested in participating in this work, how does that happen?
They simply get in touch with our office here in Atlanta, or if their state has a Cooperative Baptist Fellowship, get in touch with that person and say, I want to be a part. That's it.
You helped start a successful church in College Park, Georgia in the early 1990s and again just a few years ago in East Point. Why is it still important to start new fellowships like this, new congregations?
It's very important because there are always people to be reached.
Mm-hmm.
And we must always discover what are the means by which we can reach people. One would think that we have too many churches in America because there are places where you can find one or two on every corner. There are still people who are unreached by the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
That number continues to grow. And we will always need congregations that come together in order to reach people.
Well, tell us about your call to the ministry. You mentioned on the regular program that you had that sense rather early in life, but how did that develop?
Well, it developed even earlier than age 14. By age 8, I was aware that God was calling me to ministry. I tried to avoid it. I wanted to avoid it because even at age 8, I could look at things that preachers were experiencing, and no, I didn't want that life. My adopted grandfather, the man that adopted my father, he was pastor of the church we attended.
Mm.
I saw what those folks did to him. Yeah. I did not want to be a pastor. So I tried to avoid it. And one of the ways I wanted to avoid it was to begin to become immersed in music. My uncle, who is still alive, he's 91 years old, lives down at Macon, but at that time living in Pennsylvania. My uncle was a musician. He was a jazz trumpeter, had his own jazz band. And I remember how impressed I was going to the summer outdoor concerts and seeing him up there. So I got interested in the trombone, and music became the thing that I wanted. Hmm. But age 14, I was very much aware of God's claim on my life. I let my pastor know of that sense of awareness. His idea was, well, you learn to preach by preaching. So instead of my finishing high school, going to college, he started me preaching right then and started me doing pastoral things. He would take me with him to visit the sick, to visit hospitals. I would assist him in funerals. He had a rather strange idea. He did not like lay people going to clean up the pulpit area. So that became my task. One of the things I'd do would be to clean up, straighten up the pulpit area. But I became aware of God's claim on my life, and then he assisted me in getting theological education and getting on the road.
You've had a number of interests or emphases over the years as a ministry. What are some of the more important parts of your ministry?
The thing that I've gravitated to out of a sense of call has been the reconciliation ministries. Mm-hmm. I came to Atlanta to work with the Home Mission Board of the Southern Baptist Convention at a time when it was wanting to do racial reconciliation. This would have been 1968. I had worked in racial reconciliation ministries in Louisville, Kentucky, working with John Claypool.
Oh.
John and I were at Southern Seminary. He was there as an adjunct teacher. I was there as a student. But one day over coffee, we got to talking about the racial situation, what the churches ought to do. And because Louisville had so many Baptist churches, black and white, we decided to see if we couldn't help the clergy become involved in racial reconciliation. So John selected six Anglos. I selected six African Americans. We met quietly, privately for, a period of 5 or 6 months. During that time, we got to know each other. We got to talk about our problems, our misunderstandings, and then what we could do to help bring the races together. Eventually, we felt comfortable enough that we could say to the ministers' conferences that each group had, we need to give up a week a month, a meeting a month, in order to do racial reconciliation. So we started, Claypool and I, what was called the Louisville Interracial Ministers Fellowship. It was Baptist churches. We met once a month, and we began doing things that we think helped Louisville to become a city that was not caught up in the disruption that many cities faced. Mm-hmm. Because of that, the Home Mission Board noticed what I was doing and invited me to come and help lead that emphasis in the Southern Baptist Convention. So for 23 years, that's what I did. It was a challenging time. I enjoyed it. I have a book, by the way, that is coming out in June that looks at those years. It does not look at the negative side of racism, but rather it looks at those people who made a contribution, those people who, and many were lay people, many were pastors, college, seminary professors, people that did not make the radar as far as publicity, mm-hmm. but they made reconciliation happen. And today, Baptists in the South are a whole different matter, and I'm glad that I had a chance to be a part of that experience.
Tell us the title of the book that's coming out.
The book draws from one of the African-American spirituals. When all God's children get together, what a time, what a time, what a time.
Well, we will look forward to that. In addition to the reconciliation work, you've been active in a number of areas of social justice, human rights, equality, serving on numerous committees and boards. How important is it that Christian leaders and lay people address these issues today?
Well, we have no reason to call ourselves Christian if we don't. The love of God, the reach of God is for every person, none to be excluded. And so our task now is to find how do we actually embrace what God is all about. It just so happens that God has brought to our shores here in America every nation under the earth. And we don't need to talk about going necessarily to other lands to find people. They're here. And if we can love and reach the people that are here, if we can embrace them and share with them the love of God, we will have fulfilled what it means to be Christian.
Emmanuel McCall, it's been a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you.